Good evening. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. Today is September 3rd, and we're here to talk about what's up this fall 2015. This summer, I was getting more and more questions both on radio shows, internet shows, and from clients and subscribers asking me about all sorts of extreme scenarios predicted for the fall. Everything from astrological calendars and four blood moons to ancient prophecies to predictions of financial collapse. And finally, I decided, you know, there's something going on here, and there's something that's being encouraged by what I call fear porn in a very negative way. So I thought I'd take a serious look at what was happening this fall and see if I couldn't bring it back to ground, because in fact, at the same time, I was saying that we were in for a major turn, and I think that's true. Now, that's a turn that we've been coming into. If you go back and you read all the wrap-ups over the last 2 years, you'll see we've been working every quarter and every wrap-up to help you adjust to that turn and, in fact, see the opportunities for you. Now, I should say, every fall between September 15th and November 15th in my professional career for my entire life is always the most intense period of the year for a multiple reasons. Many government budgets are being finalized, including the U.S. budget. The harvest is still coming in, and so we know if it's a good year or a bad year, you know, and who won and who lost on the harvest. And then if you're on a calendar year, which many companies are, this is your last push to get everything done in the year. So it's always an intense period. People come back from the beach and they're all energized to go after their summer vacations. So in one sense, this year is no different from the other sense. But at the same time, we've been watching change unfold, and that change is now really going to start to build to a critical mass. So I want to talk about it today. I have four sections I want to cover. One is I want to go over the fall calendar, and if you want to, you can pull up that commentary. If you go to the website, the section on the left will show you the links, and it's listed under public commentaries, what's up this fall 2015. So we're going to go over the fall calendar again. Then I want to talk about the reengineering underway and how a variety of different forces are coming together in a critical mass that's going to start to really bring about what I would call a major turn in the economy. Then I want to talk about shadow work. Shadow work is a name of a recent book on the topic of how our work lives are being significantly transformed by what the author calls a tidal wave of shadow work. Let me just read you one section. Shadow work includes all of the unpaid tasks we do on behalf of businesses and organizations that has slipped into our routine stealthily. Most of us do not realize how much of it we are already doing, even as we pump our own gas, scan and bag our own groceries, execute our own stock trades, and build our own unassembled furniture. I want to add to this a whole load of extreme shadow work that comes as a result of centralized systems. Centralizing or doing things that are lawless or the impact is inhuman. To help you with that, I've prepared a commentary which is up on the website called Shadow Work. And what I did is I go through all the categories we're going to go through today, but I give lots of examples. And I think one of the things I could say is people who are successful in this environment have found a way to identify the risks provided by shadow work and sort of jump the curve and also see the opportunities. Many newer small businesses are people that are doing something, helping people adjust and deal with the shadow work that's coming into their lives. Finally, the last section I want to cover actions you can take to navigate. Many of these things are things we've talked about before, but I want to summarize them in this context. And for those of you who are new subscribers, I think it'll help for you to have a summary. Because of this topic, and because I thought it was so important to help you take some time over Labor Day to look ahead, see what's coming, and figure out how you're going to navigate this in a way that's going to work for you and, as I say, harvest the situation and let it, instead of the situation harvesting you. I've done a series of commentaries and book reviews, ancillary reports to supplement this presentation. So there's been a method in the madness in what we've been producing over the last month. One, as I mentioned, is the commentary What's Up This Fall, which is a calendar of political, major political and economic events that are happening in September and October. We have a commentary called Shadow Work, which is a list of the categories I'm going to go over and gives you lots of examples so you can see all the ways that time and money is being sort of drained from the middle class by this phenomena. We did a book review called The Guinea Pigs of Control. I'm very concerned about the capacity of organized crime and some of the private companies and security firms that are astute at using force, including invisible weaponry, and what they're going to be up to in some places. This is not something that's going to hit a lot of people, but where it does hit you, you need to know it exists. So I wrote a book review called The Guinea Pigs of Control with lots of links, and then a book review called The Modern Mercenary about the rise of private armies. We did a Solari report on false flags because covert operations is definitely happening within the population all over the world. And so you need to be able to see them and understand them. And we did a Solari report last week with Dr. Laura Thompson called Wellness for Fall 2015. And investing in your health is going to be very important because we're coming into a period of high stress. So this is a little bit more intense than our weekly Solari report. And part of it is because I'm going to take you deeply into the nuts and bolts of how the slow burn is engineered. So we're really going to get into the nuts and bolts, or in the commentaries, if you go into all the links, whether it's the technologies of control or how to take care of your health without going into the traditional medical system, or different links related to this fall 2015, or the way shadow work hit you. We're really going to get into sort of the tremendous detail on the different ways your time and money is used in a way which is really not respectful of you and is draining your equity, whether it's your living equity or your financial equity. Okay, so let's dive in. The fall calendar, what's up this 2015? The pig is moving through the stake. Now, as I said, this is every fall. Every fall I shake my head and I think, how is this all going to get done between September 15th and November 15th? And it always magically seems to get done. I really think it's a miracle. But this year is very intense. So we have the Iran deal, which needs to be finalized by September 18th. The latest news is that it looks like the president has the votes, which is phenomenal for that to be lined up before Labor Day. But of course, anything can happen. So Iran deal, which is a multi-country deal. It's not just U.S. and Iran. It's many other countries. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, we haven't been hearing a lot about it as the Iran deal's been going through. But again, that's a pig moving through the snake as well. And there's real tension among the allies. Latest round with Australia and New Zealand, real problems. China wants yuan in the SDR system. It appears that Lagarde may go along with the staff recommendation. The indication is that they're going to say no this year, but instead of waiting on the five-year cycle, they'll put it in. But the politics of China, as you can see, the Chinese currency and the Chinese stock market are quite intense, and they're going to be all for the rest of the year. It's really been China that's keeping the global economy chugging along. And if China starts to turn towards more of building internal markets and slows down a bit, you know, that is clearly going to reverberate throughout the economy. Other political deals underway. There's a rumor that the UN proposal will come out during the gathering at the UN in September to make Palestinian a state. We'll see. France is expected to propose it. If that's the case, on top of the Iran deal, that's going to be quite interesting. I said to one person, well, that's the guarantee that Iran won't drop a nuclear bomb on Israel, because then they'd have to drop it on a Palestinian state. It's the ultimate poison pill. Behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership is the Trade Services Agreement and the Transatlantic Investment Partnership. And I doubt that work is going to stop on that. And I think you're going to want to see that done in the next year and a half. And of course, campaigns in a variety of different places are underway, including the very early, but intense competition over the primaries for the U.S. presidential election. Anniversaries, many anniversaries during the fall. September 11th, 2015 is the 14th anniversary of 9/11. And of course, that's a sensitive time in New York. New York takes that anniversary seriously, and I think will for quite some time to come. The reason I bring it up is probably the most important political event for the rest of the year is the September 26th to 28th meeting at the United Nations in New York City. New York City's, if you live in New York City and you're going to take a sabbatical, September is not a bad time to do it. The 70th regular session of the UN General Assembly starts on September 15th. It's expected that there's going to be adoption of a post-2015 development agenda. Somebody called it Global Agenda 21 on steroids. And then on September 25th, Pope Francis is going to address the General Assembly after, are you ready for this, on September 4th, addressing the joint session of the U.S. Congress. And that's unprecedented for the Pope. I believe this may be Pope Francis's first big official visit to the U.S. as Pope. Obviously, he's been here many times before, not as Pope. And he's going to, but remember, joint session of U.S. Congress on the 24th, next day goes up to the U.N., addresses the General Assembly. Then on he'll go down to Philadelphia to hold a Sunday Mass on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. And then come, and then on the 28th, that following Monday, you're going to see an assembly, an unprecedented assembly of world leaders, the Chinese president, the Russian president, Putin, Obama, French president, Iranian president, and many more. All together, it's going to be the Chinese president's first state trip to the United States. It's Putin's first time in the U.S. since 2007. So you have the Pope and an unprecedented group of world leaders coming together, Pope addressing joint session of UN, and then coming into this enormous group of people in the United Nations of world leaders. And the question is, well, what are they planning on doing? I tend to believe it's going to be a photo opportunity for world government. All the world leadership comes together, does a big kumbaya, lots of photo opportunities. We all get along. We all love each other. Of course, that's not true, but that's what the picture will be. The one thing that concerns me the most about this kumbaya of world leadership is that you have, at that time, Kiplinger says that Congress will not have finalized the U.S. federal budget. And in fact, that the debt limit will not have been raised, and the U.S. Treasury estimates will run out of cash reserves in late October if Congress doesn't raise the debt limit. Now, whenever you don't finalize the federal budget by the end of September for the beginning of the new federal fiscal year on October 1st, you really run risks with things being too fluid, things getting up in the air, too many people taking advantage. It encourages bad behavior. The idea that the Pope, all the world leadership, is going to gather in New York and we're keeping the federal budget open for to be finalized after they say whatever they're going to say, that really makes me nervous. Well, it could just be a coincidence or not. The reality is, one possibility is the Pope and the world leaders propose something, and the next thing you know, it gets rammed through the federal appropriation process and integrated at high speed. It's something to keep an eye on. So just start watching September 24th through September 28th. Let's see what happens and what if anything, it does to the federal budget. Okay, so to keep going, what else is going on? Well, there's a lot going on. Of course, the can is being kicked in Greece and Puerto Rico and many other places dealing with debt issues. But the financial squeeze is on. First, we have the continued plunge in the commodity markets, and that translates into problems in the bonds and the bank debt markets and derivatives. And it translates into other problems in terms of revenues for municipalities and sovereign governments that depend on those commodities markets. Then on September 16th to 17th, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee meets, and that is the meeting we've all been waiting for. Will they or will they not raise interest rates? We have a job report, in fact, coming out tomorrow on Friday, and there's a belief in the marketplace that that's going to be a real indicator of what the Fed's going to do. I think the Fed's going to raise interest rates. And it may be a tiny nominal amount, you know, 12.5 basis points to 25 basis points. But I think if you look at what's going on with pension funds, with insurance companies, and the extent to which this is really hurting savers, it's going to be very difficult, I believe, for the Fed not to even bump it just a little. And if they don't bump it now, how are they going to bump it coming into elections? Earnings reports are going to be coming in and around the end of the third quarter, which is September 30. We'll get estimates coming before September 30 and then actual numbers after September 30. Of course, the U.S. equity markets are significantly overdue for a 10 to 25% correction, or were when I did the last equity overview. We've now gotten a 10% correction, so we're in correction territory. That ultimately is very healthy. We've just seen a variety of market commentators say that corporate earnings are going to start heading up, that we've bottomed in terms of pressure on corporate earnings. I don't believe that. I think we've got to slug through some difficult corporate earnings on September 30th and the end of the year. A strong dollar is just not good for a lot of the companies in the S&P 500. We have had a good harvest with plunging commodity prices, and in many respects, that harvest just lowered prices for many of the producers. Good for the consumers, though. And of course, September and October are the anniversaries of a lot of tough markets. So 2007, 2008, we saw September 2008 was the when U.S. mortgage markets hit the wall. October 2007 was when the U.S. bear market began. Of course, we had big crashes in 1987, 1989, 1997. We saw the market turn in 2002 in October. So again, you know, that the history of what I call discount sales in the equity markets always has people on pins and needles during that period. And of course, we know 95% of the growth in the U.S. equity markets occurs between November and November and June, which is why a lot of people, and including me, are going to be looking for opportunities in September and October, particularly if things are volatile, as they have been for the last 6 weeks. Global governance posturing is going to continue in the U.S. presidential primary campaigns, as well as campaigns around the world. You know, given that the UN events are in New York, it's going to be lots of posturing by New Yorkers in the election, including Trump and Clinton and Pataki. Gives them a big chance to fundraise since they're sort of New York-centric. It wouldn't surprise me, a lot of the posturing about sort of the shenanigans on the Clinton emails and the foundation are to make sure that that period is not a good fundraise for them, sort of engineered by their competition. On October 9th to 11th, we have the annual meeting of the World Bank Group and the IMF. That's often in Washington, but this is one of the years when it's not. This will be in Peru. October 19th, the Canada federal elections. Then November 15th and 16th is going to be the G20 summit in Turkey. That's going to be very interesting to see how the G20 reacts and responds to everything that has gone on through the fall and through the third quarter. We have lots of prophecies going on. I won't go through all the fear porn, but I know a lot of people believe it. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if it isn't stirring up sort of general energy to that, you know, that can then be hooked for the photo opportunity at the UN. But one that I did mention in the commentary is Martin Armstrong predicts a sovereign bond crisis starting in September 2015. I think it's already started. So, but I think there's 100% chance of a sovereign bond crisis, particularly since we're in it. If you read our second quarter wrap-up on Planet Debt, which I strongly recommend. I'm sorry, our first quarter wrap-up on Planet Debt, which I strongly recommend. It'll explain to you why. And then finally, September 15th is Jade Helm, which is the military exercise, which is sort of prototyping and testing. Full information awareness will end. And that's very important because if you look at how the control systems work, they are really one-on-one. We have the relational database technology and the the computing and cloud infrastructure, as well as artificial intelligence, necessary to manage the population and manipulate them one by one. You know, that's what the whole smartphone cell tower system on one hand is. So, you know, I keep hearing people concerned that everyone's going to be rounded up in FEMA camps. Well, no, you don't need to round everybody up in FEMA camps. You can give everybody a smartphone and you can proceed to basically run a sting on them one by one, where you manipulate and manage them in a way that makes money for you. FEMA camps are very expensive. So it's much better to leave them free range. You know, think of this as free range concentration camps where you're harvesting them one person at a time. And the power of it, one of my colleagues keeps bringing up the movie The Sting, where the target doesn't even realize they've been stung. That's the ultimate sting. You know, and to a certain extent, that's what shadow work is. It's a way of profitably putting everybody in a free range concentration camp and harvesting them without them realizing they're being stung. So Jade, the technology of Jade Helm is very, very relevant and very appropriate to doing that kind of management on scale. And finally, I would point out, I'm going to be in Europe, from September 10th I'll fly back on October 30th. I'll fly into Austin for the Secret Space Program Conference. So I'll be talking about the space economy, but it will give us a chance for the subscribers who come offline to say, okay, September, October, what happened? And what do we have to say about November and December? But clearly the campaigns are going to continue and the political deal making is going to continue through the holidays. Okay, so let's talk about the reengineering underway. I was just watching a documentary about Andrew Carnegie, whose parents were impoverished in Scotland by the Industrial Revolution. They basically, his mom lost their shoe business and had to bring the family to America for a fresh start. They were basically bankrupted by the Industrial Revolution. And then, of course, as we know, Andrew Carnegie took a deep look and said, okay, how can I make money out of this? The same thing's happening in countless ways. We're switching from an industrial economy to a networked economy. And this is a theme I've explored in great detail in the January 14th annual wrap-up and then the 2014 first quarter and third quarter wrap-ups. And I would really suggest, if you're a new subscriber, please go back and just skim through those and explore what we call the shift from global 2.0 to 3.0. So think of global 2.0 as an industrial economy and global 3.0 as a networked economy. A lot of it is the global rebalancing of the economy and the integration of digital technology. But some of it is the use of these phenomena by the rich and powerful to centralize ownership and control globally. And it's increasingly lawless how that's happening. Anyway, but it's a large phenomena, and it's one of the reasons I've tried to use the wrap-ups to explore those deeper themes, because it's very important to me that you can see what's happening and take advantage of it. And, you know, Andrew Carnegie managed to build a great fortune off of the industrial economy where his parents got plowed over by it. So it's very, very important that we understand the way things are going and are able to shift. But let's look at what's happening right now, because right now we're in a very critical phase and a very intensive phase. We've had, to a certain extent, what's happening is in any sector of the economy, you are standardizing the process by which things occur. So you see the standardization of process and then a reengineering with information technology. Now, in many sectors, that works naturally. It's inspired by the marketplace, and it happens. There are many other sectors that are controlled by government, and government is now going through and mandating that it will be standardized and reengineered. And essentially, that's what Obamacare and educational testing is. It's a way of standardizing the process in healthcare, standardizing the process in education, and forcing everything to go online and to be digitized so that it can be reengineered in ways that dramatically change who and what controls and owns the intelligence and the equity. So, for example, in Obamacare, I'm saying that approximately $1 to $2 trillion of labor costs will be re-engineered out of healthcare by bringing in new technology and new tools. At the same time, we see the U.S. health, the U.S. stock market, led by the healthcare sector, as enormous number of companies specializing in healthcare-related software and information technology, and systems and insurance, the financial guys as well, making enormous amount, you know, just pulling in and sucking in enormous amounts of the equity in that area. So you really see a shift out of small providers, being the doctors, nurses, smaller hospitals, and into the big corporations. The same thing I suspect is going to happen, I believe is going to happen in education, particularly after the election, if we get push for legislation that mandates vouchers that have attached to them the requirement for standardized curriculum and testing. We're seeing local enforcement targeted, and behind there, I think you're going to see a push to do the same thing. At the same time, we're seeing the growth of robotics and drones. The reports I'm getting from around the country, around the world, is robotics are now really moving up the S-curve. And it's very dramatic the extent to which they can automate not just manufacturing businesses, but other businesses. We saw this last year. Japan opened its first all-robotics hotel. Watch this go through the fast food restaurants. Watch deliveries go by drones. All of these things, it's coming. But the beginnings of the S-curve and the integration on the industrial side is really happening. Same thing's happening with data on the cloud. Sometimes I think half the hacking is just to force us all to go into the cloud. And then, of course, we're still moving through the implications of a tremendous amount of banking, new banking and financial regulation. Now, if you're in a county, when you and I discuss these things, if we discuss them in their different industry sectors, so healthcare, or education, or enforcement, or automation in manufacturing, or information systems, you know, we talk about them as though they're something separate. When you come into a county and you look at the impact on the middle class income and life within a county, what you're talking about is squeezing the labor costs out of all of the different sectors in that county and doing it in a way which can absolutely devastate the middle class income. So you're basically squeezing the doctors, squeezing the nurses, squeezing the hospital staff, you're squeezing the teachers, you're squeezing the school administrators, you're squeezing the cops, you're squeezing the people in manufacturing, you're squeezing the ISPs, you're squeezing the banks, you're squeezing. So in a county, everyone who's on the line managing many of the day-to-day operations or the retail that feeds off of them is getting squeezed. And I think this fall you're going to feel the beginnings of an enormous tipping point on that. Not to say that the squeeze hasn't been bad before or hasn't reached other tipping points, but I think you're really, given what's happening in education and healthcare, you're really going to start to see some real serious rising in tensions. Now, at the same time that the squeezy are hurting, I assure you the squeezors are making a tremendous amount of money. I wanted to read you a paragraph from a CEO writing in the, he's the CEO of a tech startup writing in the Wall Street Journal last week. Part of the problem is that startups have to compete with hegemons like Google and Facebook that offer extraordinary salaries for the best talent. I recently met a college student whom Facebook recruited as a summer intern at $10,000 a month. A junior developer fresh out of college can expect to earn around $10,000 monthly plus benefits, $100,000 signing bonus, and $200,000 in stock options. For a more experienced developer, the sky's the limit. Business Insider reported last year that a startup offering an annual salary of $500,000 was able, let me turn the page, was unable to lure a senior developer away from Google because he was earning $3 million a year in cash and stock. Okay, so the squeezors are making money. So let's add, so we're coming into the tipping point. We have all these industries that make up the core middle class in many counties being it re-engineered all at the same time. Let's add to that the plunge in commodity prices. Some of the areas in the country that have been doing the best over the last 5 years are both oil and gas areas or farmers where the commodity producers have been doing very well. And this year, for 2 years now, we've had commodities plunging. Many of those producers have debt, and that's putting them in a real squeeze on top of it. I appreciate the lower food prices or less increases in food prices and lower energy prices are good for many consumers and many manufacturers and other businesses. But if you're in a place where the healthcare and the education is getting squeezed and you're highly dependent on farming and or oil and gas, and that's getting squeezed as well, you've got a real pickle going on. Add on top of that, to the Fed is now coming into the end of quantitative easing, a turn in the bond market, even if they only bump interest rates a little bit, pressure is really to do that. And what we're looking at is raising the cost of capital across the entire society, including in government, which over the last 50 years as the bond market got stronger and bigger, has been pumping out money to a lot of different sectors. And so what you're talking about is raising the cost of capital across the society, including in government, which has been pumping out enormous amounts of largesse. So you're turning in the opposite direction. The combination together is a tremendous squeeze on the American middle class and middle classes throughout the G7 nations. Now, one of the most important points I want to make and this has come up again and again in discussing the fall with all of you, please stop thinking that the implosion of the American middle class has any implication for the U.S. stock market. The whole point of the financial coup d'etat was to de-link the American middle class from the U.S. stock market to reestablish the U.S. stock market and the equity markets globally to depend on the rise of the global middle class, which would enable you to squeeze the middle class in the G7 nations, including the U.S. So, in fact, the reengineering of the American middle class is fuel that fuels the U.S. stock market by sweeping up the equity of individuals, of families, of households, and shifting it into large corporations. You're basically harvesting the American middle class in a way that makes corporations stronger. So we've got to get out of this notion that my, the drop of my income or the destruction of my world means that the American stock market is going to crash. It's just mathematically not accurate. And part of the reason we tend to make that assumption is we all grew up in a world where the American consumer market was the largest single market in the world, and it was the attractor. Now, when the European Union got created, we created a market that was bigger. So it was the European Union consumer who was the number one attractor, although we were still in the game because we were still pretty big. But now as Asia goes online and grows, we're seeing the rise of the Asian and the emerging market consumer. And frankly, there's enormous multiples more of them than there are of us. And the reality is multinationals serve a global consumer, whether it's a wholesale consumer or a retail consumer, and the global middle class is rising. And the reality is, the reason we all read a book called Left Behind in the 90s is because, in fact, the American middle class was left behind. I've told the story, and I've put Sir James Goldsmith on the blog telling the story. But if you read my book, Dylan Reed, The Aristocracy of Stock Profits, there were two groups in Washington, and one group wanted to help the American consumer pay down their debt and build their skills to succeed in a global economy. And the other said, no, let's just bubble the economy and roll them. And that's the plan that won. So the reality is you need to change your paradigm because the economic reality has changed. What we are seeing is lower long-term energy costs are going to be potentially explosive for equity valuations and corporate equity valuations. Robotics, drones, all of this automation is going to have explosive increases in equity long run, which is not to say that lots of companies won't fail. I mean, clearly, if you look at Sears, if you look at many of the retail companies that haven't made the switch, You know, I always say Starbucks was successful in 2.0 and is very successful. It's one of the leaders in 3.0. You know, Sears didn't do what Starbucks did. So Sears is getting trapped over in 2.0. So is Radio Shack. But remember, many of these things are very, very long-term good news. The reengineering of the U.S. health industry and of education, if anything, is government creating mandates that the customer pay, whether through property taxes or forced purchase of insurance, and they're creating really fake monopolies for publicly traded companies. It's not pretty, it's very ugly, but the reality is one of the reasons it's being done is to pump the stock market. Anyway, so 2.0 is collapsing and global 3.0 is rising. And it's very important that you see the economy through that prism, because there are areas that are dying and there are areas that are booming. I just came through Austin, Texas, having been out in Silicon Valley. They're both booming. It's just unbelievable to watch. Watch the refugee movements around the world. To a certain extent, they are all traveling from the areas being harvested to the areas owned and controlled by the people who are doing the harvest. One way to think about it, even energetically, is they're following the booty back to Empire Central. They're following the money. It's pretty logical, and you can tell from how many of them there are that somewhere deep inside they know what's going on. So it's critical to understand that most of the current reengineering is designed to consolidate ownership and control into the stock market and large investors, and so ultimately the goal is to be good for that. It's one of the reasons we focused our annual wrap-up in January 2015 on planet equity, and I really encourage you to read that as well. Okay, let's talk about shadow work. Craig Lampert wrote a book called Shadow Work, The Unpaid, Unseen Jobs That Fill Your Day. Let me just read what he describes. He says, we need to recognize a profound transformation in the nature of work that is significantly altering lives, the incoming tidal wave of shadow work. Shadow work includes all of the unpaid tasks we do on behalf of businesses and organizations. It has slipped into our routine stealthily. Most of us do not realize how much of it we are already doing, even as we pump our own gas, scan and bag our own groceries, execute our own stock trades, and build our own unassembled furniture. I think Dr. Lampert has done us a great service by naming this phenomena, and I want to use his description or his term, shadow work, to address one of my primary concerns regarding this fall, because rather than worrying about ancient prophecies or, different commentators, predictors of collapse, I think it's very important that you see the potential for a significant increase in shadow work in your life, and you find a way to protect yourself and re-engineer it. I hear from people all around the world, from North America, Europe, and Asia, from colleagues, from subscribers, from clients, they are all managing explosive amounts of shadow work. And so I want to go through it so you identify it as a phenomena and you think very proactively about how it could happen to you, how it is happening to you, and you make sure you protect yourself from it, because I think there's a great amount you can do. There are 14 areas. We've put up a commentary with a lot of detailed examples to help you understand this phenomena. And I think when you see it all together, you'll start to understand the nature to which shadow work has crept into your life. Okay, then the first area I hear a lot of is fraud and deterioration of consumer protections, and I think they're related. To give you an example of we've seen a lot of changes in the legal system in North America, stripping away consumer protections in areas like student loans. I do a great interview next week on the student loan scam with one of the, I think, one of my favorite sources in that market, Alan Kalinch. It's pretty shocking what's happened, but many of the standard consumer protections have been pulled away from student loans, but we see similar things in the subprime mortgages and credit cards. You see yourself becoming the target of all sorts of predatory financial schemes, and that's problem number one. But let's look at the list of the fraud problems. Credit card fraud. mortgage fraud, tax refund fraud, securities fraud, identity theft, burglary and car theft, pump and dump schemes. All of these are things that detract and take a great deal of time. The second category, financial stress. Financial stress comes from many different areas. Globalization, of course, means global labor competition. Technology means automation. And then combine that with currency debasement, and the slow burn squeeze is really on. It means most people have falling incomes and rising expenses, unless they're on, as I said, on the squeezer side. But let's look at some other dynamics too. No returns on savings. Once upon a time, 20 years ago, you could get 8 to 9% on your bank deposits. Now savers are getting almost nothing. And that's been going on for some time. And it's causing people to spend a lot more time looking for yield and to take a lot more risk. And it's one of the key contributors to the slow burn for many people. Number two is double standard borrowing costs. The Federal Reserve member banks can borrow from the Fed at less than 1%. Meantime, your son or daughter are paying 6% on their student loan. You're paying 20% on your credit card. And if you look at what's that going to cost you in times and money, it can be quite extraordinary. The third domino, defaults. You have people in your family who default on their mortgage. They default on their student loan. They get in trouble. They lose their home. They can't afford their apartment. The next thing you know, they're moving in with you and they need to borrow money. Aggressive servicing. Believe it or not, I was just on the phone with a lawyer about someone who had lost their home because the mortgage servicer, someone had put a fraudulent mortgage on them and they proceeded to foreclose. But imagine, I'll give you another example that I used. Your mother-in-law loses her home and is still having problem with her credit card company. She moves in with you, and the credit card company is calling three times a day. And of course, it's ruining your, it's creating enormous amount of environmental pollution for you. Those are just some examples. It goes on and on. Category number three, health woes and environmental pollution. The first one, of course, is global spraying, as well as a variety of other things like dirty electricity, fluoride in the water, ongoing forms of environmental pollution that put pressure on your health and really mean you have to pay more attention in sort of taking care of your health. Deterioration in the food supply. We've talked about deterioration in the quality of the food supply and GMOs on many occasions for many salary reports. And finally, vaccines. Imagine if two of your children, and this has happened to somebody I know, two children were given vaccines mandated for their school system. They both got autism, which meant their mother had to quit her job and spend the rest of her lives caring for them and provide enough money to ensure that they were funded so that somebody could care for her, for them after she died. Extraordinary expense, destroyed the marriage, destroyed the family. Imagine discovering that you had to quit your job and work the rest of your life to care for kids who are now essentially functionally harmed in tremendous ways. Municipal and infrastructure woes, number four. Municipalities are experiencing falling incomes and rising expenses as a variety of, you know, as a result of many of the things we've been talking about. And so they're under pressure to balance their budgets. And of course, they have to turn to property owners or taxpayers in their areas. Some of the different things that happen to people: speeding tickets, fire department inspections, parking tickets, asset forfeiture, and more extreme kinds of enforcements. They can't afford to keep up the utilities, so the utilities go down. So you've got to buy a generator, and God forbid you can't get the fire department or the sheriff to show up on time. It gets worse if you're targeted as an immigrant or sort of driving while black, or if you're an honest cop and no one can tell the difference between you and the cops who've been sort of protecting the narcotics trafficking. So we get all sorts of tensions and problems between different groups inside the municipality and the municipality operations. Okay, number five, and this is a big user of time, but it's one I never resent investing, and that is continuing education. Here's the reality. When you move from an industrial-based economy to one that's organized with digital systems, we all have to get in the business of learning. We all thought, you know, I thought I started an investment company or a media company, and no, I didn't. I started a systems company that does those things. We're all in the systems business now. Most economic flows are being re-engineered by information technology and software businesses, and so we need to continually learn new skills as the government regulations change. We need to globalize. We need to learn about different places and different cultures. The reality is staying economically relevant means operating at much higher learning metabolisms. If you look, for example, at how many software packages and online services my business requires me to know and understand, and I'm taking on new ones and dropping old ones every year, and you look at how often I have to upgrade packages and learn new solutions, it's tremendous. So globalization means increased complexity and higher learning speeds. Whether it's we take online courses or our business goes down and we have to learn new skills and go back to school, you know, it's on and on and on. But you got to fall in love with lifelong learning because you're going to have to be doing it. And that's one area of time investment that if you're, you know, it's almost cheaper to recognize it and start to make it now. Because you can do it earlier, you can do it late. You're much better off if you do it early. Okay, area number six, poor systems integrity. This is, if I'm caught venting or whining, this is going to be it. Number one, we pay a great deal of money for expensive information systems. We spend a lot of time loading them. We spend a lot of time learning them, all to discover that their primary goal, in fact, is not to provide us with the kind of information systems we need, but simply to allow other people to grab our data or do surveillance on us. And we're paying to basically destroy our own privacy. But one of the things that happens as a result is they're very buggy. They don't always work very well. And they're clearly organized to serve the intelligence agencies ahead of us. And it's always very hard to pay for your own collapse of privacy. But what it means is the systems don't have the kind of integrity we need. I call that first one the intelligence agencies blue. The second is hacking. We're watching hacking all around the world, competition between various people, including large competitors. It's one of the ways, hacking is one of the ways they compete with you. They can't beat you by telling the truth on their media news, so instead they hack. And then finally, spam. If we all spend 5 minutes a day cleaning out spam that doesn't quite, you know, junk filters on the email or on the server never work perfectly. So if we all spend 5 minutes a day just cleaning out our spam, times 320 days online, some of us go on vacation and go offline, that's 30 hours a year. That's 30 hours a year to clean out spam you don't want. That's very expensive. Okay, next category, number seven, accidents and disasters. When a population is under stress, accidents occur more often because people are tired, they're sick, they're drunk, they're drugged. So many reports of car accidents. Then, of course, we have the disasters, whether it's natural or weather warfare, we can't always say, but tornadoes, power outages, nuclear meltdowns, hurricanes, not to mention regional wars. From watching other communities go through this, we all appreciate we can't necessarily depend on governmental authorities, although in many instances we can depend on our neighbors. So it's very good to be astute and discerning about car accidents or other equipment accidents. I live in a farming community with farming equipment around. You want to be very careful. But take a course on disaster preparedness. Read a number of the best books on the subject because it pays to be prepared. But again, an investment of time many of us didn't have to make 20 or 30 years ago. Number eight, legislative and regulatory mandates. The amount of increased legislative and regulatory mandates the government is pouring on all around the world are enormous. It's particularly bad in North America. I have clients and subscribers in other countries who just say, "Oh my God, it's so wonderful to be here. You're free. You're free to just start a business without, you know, 5,000 licenses and enforcement actions." Number nine, media debasement. A great deal of corporate media is just promoting a false reality or pure entertainment. It doesn't give us the news we need to know to keep abreast. I love the byline from Sam Smith's Progressive Review, "All the news while there's still time to do something about it." Corporate news is all the news, you know, after it's too late to do anything about it. Of course, I think subsequent to the bailout period and the financial crisis, most people know they can't trust corporate media. I'm seeing a new kind of very unfortunate development where instead you're seeing people fall prey to a wide variety of alternative media that's even worse. It's gloom and doom. Instead of being bread and circus, it's gloom and doom and fear porn. And unfortunately leads to very bad decision making. Lots of media online, whether corporate or alternative, comes with or comes across systems that add entrainment technology and subliminal programming, all sorts of mind control that influences attitudes and decision making. I stress having all subscribers listen to our Solari report on entrainment technology, or a great one with John Rappaport called Matrix Nuts and Bolts. It's very important that you understand how all this stuff works so you can protect yourself against it. But I've seen just people make terrible financial and life choices based on falling prey to believing something that they've heard, whether corporate media or alternative media. And it's very expensive to kind of get their lives back after that's over. Number 10, immigration. Immigration is happening. We're watching a rising tide of refugees and immigration. Right now, Europe is in the spotlight, but if you're along the Mexican border, you're really feeling it in the United States. And it's very important. If you are in those areas, you run the risk of having it impact you in extreme ways. I think the rest of us, we all need to dig in and see if we can help out in whatever way we can help out. My fear, if anything, is the situation become too overwhelming and we lose our compassion, which we can't afford to do. Number 11, organized crime, covert operations, and surveillance. This is an area that is only going to impact a small percentage of the people listening to this discussion tonight, but it's very important that you be aware of it, because we are watching the rise globally of not just organized crime gangs who distribute the illegal narcotics and guns, but private companies who can field private armies and security operations, including prototyping applications of non-lethal weapons and surveillance. And as commodity revenues plunge and the squeeze is on, these people have the power to create ways of making money that can be exceedingly violent, and some of them in very sneaky and invisible ways. So, you know, they know how to run private covert ops. That's what we're seeing in Ferguson, Missouri, and places like that, covert operators moving in and staging riots. Anyway, but it can have a very dramatic impact, and it's important to know that capacity exists. And it's one of the reasons I did a series of commentaries, both the guinea pig technologies of control and the modern mercenary, and invited Richard Dolan to join us to talk about false flags. I wanted to have a whole body of material when we talked about this for you to educate yourself by it. If you've never gotten hit by one of those sort of ops, you know, it's pretty amazing when it happens. And if it does happen, you need to know that you can get the information and help by listening to some of that material, because there are many other people who've experienced it. And I think that activity is going to ramp up in the fall. Ideally, I want you to understand it so you can see it coming and avoid it. Issue number 12, or item number 12, cultural debasement. There is no doubt that a steady media diet that denigrates human life and values, as well as entrainment technology on smartphones and other media that bombards people, is really causing a debasement of cultural values. I see it every day. And as the field deteriorates, it makes it harder for individuals to really strive for excellence and to get the joy and bounce you get from being part of groups of people and networks that are really excellent. And so you really have to be careful to organize your time. Now, it's hard for people, especially parents. You know, their kids are encouraged by TV programs and movies to act disrespectful of themselves, of each other, of you. It's very hard to get them out of Facebook and onto doing their homework or running up in mountains or learning how to ski or sail. But it's unbelievably important to do. So our great ally, Dr. Joseph Farrell, says we all have to take responsibility to preserve Western civilization, and I couldn't agree more. I think if anything scares me, it's the cultural debasement. Next item, operational defaults. Throughout your life, we all depend on people. We depend on bankers, on gardeners, on lawyers, on doctors, on nurses, on local businesses, on employees, on joint venture partners, on bosses. They get hiccuped by shadow work. And the reality is when they get hurt or hiccuped, we can be harmed. Our employees can be rear-ended by a drunk driver. They're in the hospital and home in bed. We lose their services. Our health premiums go up. Our largest vendor's bank can be acquired, and then suddenly the bank pulls their loans and they can't deliver. It goes on and on. You can have all sorts of high integrity, trustworthy people in your life, and they get hiccuped, and sometimes they can't help but hiccup you. One of the things I think it's very important to do is to set up your operation as much as possible, so when they do hiccup you, you don't have to pass that hiccup down. It's part of being reliable in this environment. And last, number 14, spiritual warfare. Of course, I think at the root of all of this, we're dealing with spiritual warfare. And that means it's absolutely important for you to budget time to attend to your spiritual practice and find your pathway for winning at spiritual warfare. Indeed, spiritual protection is ultimately your greatest air cover. It's what I believe. We have many resources on the Salieri Report to help you deal with that. We have a wonderful article called Coming Clean. We did a Salieri Report with Eunice Boston on Coming Clean, Transforming Lives Through the Power of Cleaning. And then we did one on the Sun Tzu's great book, The Art of War, The Power of It with John Rappaport, Spiritual Warfare with John Rappaport, Spiritual Warfare with Reverend Franklin Sanders. Again, that's it, the 14 items on shadow work. Go to the website and check out the commentary on shadow work. I want you to think of this as a phenomena, and I want you to think about how you are going to protect yourself on shadow work and where the business opportunities are for you to help others deal with their shadow work. Or a lot of the successful small businesses I know who have started are really, their business is helping people deal with shadow work in one or variety of areas. Anyway, so take a look at shadow work. Okay, so let's turn to our last section, really actions you can take. I wanted to read from a newsletter someone sent me today by a fellow named James Keller, who I don't know, and he was talking about something called the Rahu period, and I'll just refer to it as the period here, but I think it gives an important overview. It's kind of a vision I want you to hold in your mind. The first year of the period might feel unsettled. This could affect financial markets, and we could see wider fluctuations in stock prices. The period begins on October 1st of 2015 and continues for 18 years. All this being said, life will go on, so there is no reason to worry. It's an 18-year period, and the changes will take place slowly over the entire course of the period, not just at the beginning. Even though parts may feel like a wild run, this ride, the sun will continue to rise, and people will go on living their lives, so there's nothing to worry about. The point of looking at it is to shed light on the fact that revolutionary change is necessary. I want to emphasize that again. Revolutionary change is necessary. Clearly, we can't keep going on the way we're going. This is my words. So we have to change. Revolutionary change is necessary. Doesn't mean that the revolutionary change the leadership is planning is good for us, but we have the power to shift this and implement our own revolutionary change. But it is necessary. We need to embrace that process and not resist it. If we can embrace change consciously instead of being painful, it can be an exciting and amazing period that brings us into unimaginable realms of innovation, understanding, and awakening. I believe that absolutely. one of my best colleagues said, you know, the thing to understand about this fall is that the law of attraction is at work and it's going to become more powerful. So are you attracting the global financial collapse? Or are you collapsing? You know, society finally gets the consciousness we need to shift things in a out of war and out of collapse and into real change. So let's look at some of the areas where I think you can make a difference by how you organize your time and money. Spiritual practice. I'm a great believer, whether I don't like to tell other people what to do for me. Prayer is absolutely essential to maintaining coherence. I think of prayer as sort of the meta navigation tool, which tells me what I need to do today and how I need to do it. I just get so much insight from prayer. I can't imagine living without it. And it's what keeps me in a higher mind. So, but I know I'm going to be going to a workshop on the Pista Sophia. I'll put a commentary up about it on the website. But I'll be studying the Pista Sophia in the 2 weeks from now in Italy. And that's something that always, the Pista Sophia always moves me into a much higher mind. I wanted to give you some of the words of wisdom from my favorite sermon by T.D. Jakes. It's called Faith, Hope, and Charity. I've tried to get permission from Jakes's ministry to publish it on the Salaire Report, and I can't get permission. And they don't mark it in their stewards. It's an old one. But let me give you some of my favorite lines. It's called Faith, Hope, and Charity. And let me just run down. God does not need what you have lost to bless you. What that means is if you lost something, what you have left is quite sufficient to grow into whatever blessing you want and deserve. So don't worry about what you've lost. Just remember to nourish what you have. Don't let what you have lost ruin what you have left. I've seen so many people upset by their loss. And of course, when change happens, things get lost. We lose things. Let their anger or upset about that loss ruin everything else left. Another favorite line from the sermon is, if you want to go to the basement, you have to get off me and take the stairs. My elevator only goes to the first floor. I think we all need to clear out of our lives people who really want to go into a lower mind and stay in a lower mind. You have to, you can't function in this environment in that lower mind. Whatever you do, don't lose your love, because love is the source of our power. I think it's very easy in times like this to lose your sense of compassion, to lose your love, to start to want to treat people the way they're treating you. And that's a terrible mistake. Faith is the ingredient. It's the substance of things hoped for but yet unseen. The point is, it is our faith that creates the raw material that we use to build our future. Think of it as the cement that makes the bricks that build the cathedral. So faith is the ingredient. Without faith, we ain't going to get any place. He focuses in the, T.D. Jakes focuses on the sermon, on the scripture from Corinthians, and now abideth faith, hope, and charity. And he focuses on the word, not faith or hope or charity, but on the word abideth, and the importance of building your life on what stays. The reality is not everything stays, and during periods of change, there are things that move out of your life. When you change the political and economic flows, when you change cost of capital, things move, they shake, things grow out of alignment, things that worked before no longer work, and it's very important to let them go. And you do. You need to build your life not on things that come and go, but on things that really stay. And part of what he's sermonizing is about the fact that the things that stay are faith, hope, and love. And that's what you've got to build your life on. One of the things I will say is sometimes when people are being moved out of your life, it's a good thing. If you look at the process I went through in the 90s to clear out a lot of the people that I'd worked with on Wall Street and Washington out of my life, thank heavens that I managed to move them out. If not, I'd be in the middle of a nest of scorpions right now. I look at some of the people in Washington and Wall Street right in the middle of the nest of scorpions, and I think, there, but for the grace of God, go I. Okay, the second thing you can do is you can become serious about time investment. Do a time budget. One of my favorite desktop screensaver says, stay calm and do the math. You need to pull out a piece of paper and write your time budget. You need to save time. Cut anything out of your life. Get radical. Anything out of your life that does not have a good intention for you, does not give you energy, does not make you money, does not support you, cut it out. Cut out corporate media, cut out gloom and doom, cut out fear porn. You know, if staying up late at night means you get on the internet and you read all that crap, go to bed early, get up early. You won't want to read it in the morning. One thing for me, I can always improve my personal habits. And I know that if I do, I save a lot of time. Success is about good habits. Simplify, under schedule. If there's anything I could say this fall, you know, build into your schedule 10 hours a week for shadow work that you don't even have any plan of doing. And then if it doesn't come, fine, use it as a spa day. Okay, number three, maintain high standards of integrity. One of the things that brings a lot of shadow work into our lives is when we do business or depend on people or organizations that don't have integrity. And you really need to get radical about trying to only associate with organizations and people who you can trust. So, you know, if you're custodian at MF Global, if your brokerage account is custodian at MF Global and the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, who engineered the housing bubble and the strong dollar policy, becomes the chairman, get out. It's very hard. You know, in traditional healthcare, modern medicine can do miraculous things. You know, we all love antibiotics when we need them, but you have to be very, very careful about accessing healthcare from a for-profit corporate institution. We know that, you know, traditional healthcare can kill you in many ways. Anyway, you have to help people from a state of coherence. And that means if you're dealing with people or organizations that are incoherent, you need to make sure that you either get them out of your life or you don't let them make you incoherent. It's a little bit like the lifeguard not letting the drowning man drown him. It's not going to help anybody. Okay, number four, invest in your physical and cultural health proactively. We just did a Solaria report with Dr. Laura Thompson on wellness. I refer you to that. It's very important that you proactively invest in your health in this kind of environment. Stress can be a killer, and so you really need to take care of yourself. Cultural health, again, don't fall into the divide and conquer, the degradation. It's one of the reasons I want you to understand about entrainment and mind control so you don't fall prey to it. Number five, identify your 3.0 opportunities. I know lots of people who are very successful and thriving in this environment. They're building the skills, they're moving locations. If you can, it's very important to be in a location with good infrastructure, good water, fiscally sound municipalities. Sometimes that means you have to move jobs or evolve your business. And of course, engage in lifelong learning, as I described under shadow work. Number six, please be discerning about organized crime. If you have the opportunity, go through those commentaries and Solaria reports that I described. You know, it's a bit gruesome stuff, but I want you to understand it exists to be able to identify it and not fall prey to it. In that respect, I want to just warn you about the risks of getting away. I have many people who are sold a bill of goods that you can solve all your problems by leaving everything and everybody you know and going to a place where you're a complete stranger, and then you'll be happy forever. And it sounds like a marvelous story. The reality is it ain't so simple. First of all, the advantage sometimes of moving to a new area is if you can go to a place which is a much lower cost or has as a business something you're very good at. I mean, there are different reasons why, whether on the revenue side or the expense side, a particular place is much more economic for you. And it's always better to deal with things when you have far more purchasing power. But the reality is if you move someplace where you are a complete stranger, you can really set yourself up to become prey. I know of an acquaintance who went and built their dream home in Costa Rica, and the next thing you know, they had a home invasion, were almost killed. The corruption that we're dealing with is global, and people think if you move to a remote area that in reality, you're going to get away from it. In fact, what they do is they find the same corruption. It's just the people in that area sell their, you know, they sell their soul for a lot less money than they do in Silicon Valley. But the corruption, in a sense, is no different. And of course, you're spending all your time trying to get services when you're out in the middle of nowhere. So it's very tricky to get away from corruption, particularly if you're going to use digital systems. If you want to move to Antarctica, you know, or the Australian outback and not use any digital systems, well, then of course that will work to get you away from that. But remember, the corruption we're dealing with is global, and this getting away thing is far more complicated than you think. So you want to move to places that give you more power, whether because you have lots of friends there, your skills are very appropriate there, you can live for a much lower cost and you love the place. But please, please, please do your due diligence. I've seen a lot of people lose a lot of time and money moving someplace to get away and then having to come back because it really wasn't for them. Okay, number seven, disaster preparedness. The only way to stop worrying about a 1 to 3 month disaster or a local kind of disaster, Katrina, Fukushima in your area, is to be prepared for it. And once you're prepared for it, you can stop worrying about it. So develop and implement a plan for 1 to 3 month outage. Help your friends and family, or you know, those around you, learn it. Make sure you have all your documents archived. The people who come up fast from disasters are people who have digital copies of everything or paper copies of everything with their lawyer in their safe deposit box or on the cloud, you know, half a planet away. Number eight, really exercise precautions when you're in large groups or dense populations. Drive defensively. I drive all over the country, and I have to say the number of people who are on drugs, who are drinking or just driving under stress goes up all the time, and you have to be very careful and drive defensively. You want to make sure if you're in an area where there is organized crime whose revenues are dropping that you have heightened security procedures. In many areas of North America, people are learning how to use guns, getting gun licenses. Of course, I'm a gun owner and feel very strongly about the importance of that. Take care about your health when you're traveling. I can't tell you how many people I know get back from a trip and the next thing they know they've got the flu or a cold for a week or two. So you really want to make sure when you're moving among populations experiencing more stress that you really take extra precautions to protect your health. Okay, nine, financial. This is where I want to dive in and just talk about some of the issues that come up when I'm talking with clients and with subscribers. First of all, you're the governor of your money, so you need to put into your time budget time to just track and monitor. First of all, I'm not concerned about FDIC system or the sovereign insurance systems. I'm just not worried. I just see no reason why countries that can print the currency that they use wouldn't support and back those systems. At the same time, it is extremely important to stick with banks that have good, strong fundamentals so that you can avoid bail-ins, because bail-ins are going to happen. If you don't have bailouts, you're going to have some bail-ins. And the way to avoid that is to stay within the insurance limits in your jurisdiction, and to make sure you're in good, strong banks with good, strong fundamentals. Pay a lot of attention to who your custodian is. The people who were in Madoff and MF Global or in a lot of different private equity and hedge funds that got stung did not pay attention to who their custodians are. They're custodians who I worry about and others that I don't worry about. There are plenty of good custodians around, but you need to care who they are. There's coming a turn in the bond market. That means on the long end of the bond market, we could see losses in principal. It also means we could see liquidity issues in the emerging markets, and that's going to hurt prices in the lower credits or on the long end. So you position yourself for that turn, and that means essentially if you look at what you're going to have in fixed income, you're not going to make any money on that. And you need to face that. In the recent correction we're in, we're seeing ETFs not function well when they're not liquid. And so market prices differentiating from what their net asset values are. ETFs are still an immature market, and we need to realize that if we use them. Equities, we're in a correction in the equity markets. It remains to be seen if the emerging markets are going to turn down into a bear. They might. But again, I think there are going to be a lot of opportunities in the equity markets between now and November 1st. In the short term, the opportunities are to buy dividends. We're seeing excellent, for example, Swiss stocks, very high quality Swiss stocks with dividends of 4 to 8%. That's amazing. In the MLP world, we're seeing very, very attractive dividends. And the reality is, if you look at what's happening in the fixed income market, there's no yield there, but there is yield available in the equity markets. And the more of a correction we get, the more opportunity there is to get yield. Long-term equity outlook, I've continued to talk about the possibility of a crash-up. I think the long-term trend in both energy prices and in technology is going to be very, very bullish for a lot of real estate and a lot of the equity markets. Precious metals, my position is unchanged. I think 80% chance that the bull reasserts. But before that happens, we could take another large step down. 20% we're in a bear. And part of that is because if you get a high-tech, low-energy-cost crash-up scenario in the equity markets, not that much interest in precious metals. Again, I think that's only 20% chance, because hard for me to believe that 1.4 billion Chinese and 1.3 billion Indians won't always, no matter what, have an intense interest in precious metals. So the more money they make in technology, the more they're going to want to buy gold and silver. I think it's very important to pay down debt. I don't want to hear any more that your CPA says they're tax benefits. There's risk to having debt, particularly in an environment that this is deflationary. I think we're going from a debt model towards an equity model. I think you need to pay down your debt. I'm somebody who was rolling in monthly cash flow and then got hung on my debt. I wish I'd paid it all off. I would have been much stronger. So this is a strategic risk issue, and I say in a deflation, you pay off your debt if you can. Lower overhead, anything you can do to lower your overhead or invest in your infrastructure so that you permanently reduce your expenses, I would say do it. But it's important to stay comfortable. Your most important asset in this environment is your health and energy, and you need that. Have a core position for that 1 to 3 month disaster cash coin provision. And if you need to, heaven's sakes, move to where the 3.0 opportunities and skills. It's good to be around good infrastructure and around great continuing education resources. And remember, the long-term trends in many respects can be very, very positive. Plan and equity is going, and one way or another, we're going to have to sort out the debt. So in conclusion, what's going to happen this fall 2015? Change is going to accelerate. Energy will be intense. The leadership will be competing while reengineering global institutions. It's going to be a lot of fighting and shouting. Both markets and moods will be volatile and may do the unexpected. The media will shriek even louder. Some of your neighbors and family will misbehave, and some will surprise and delight you. But best of all, if you take the time to go through some of these commentaries and Saleri reports, you will be prepared to take advantage of it, and you will enjoy your life to the fullest. And whatever you do, don't let go of life. Jump in the flow and embrace it with all you've got. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.